Mr. President, when my friend Norman Reilly informed me that the 10th International Congress of Entomology would meet in Canada, the prospect of visiting your country attracted me very much, for I had had only a glimpse of it in 1928 when members of the 4th Entomological Congress went to see the Niagara Falls. However, my endocrines, the guardian angels which look after the proper functioning of the processes of life, soon left me no doubt that owing to the wear and tear of the many past years, the old body would not be able to produce the energy necessary. Mr. President, when my friend Norman Reilly informed me that the 10th International Congress of Entomology would meet in Canada, the prospect of visiting your country attracted me very much, for I had seen only a little of it in 1928 when members of the 4th Entomological Congress went to see the Niagara Falls. However, my endocrines, the guardian angels which look after the proper functioning of the processes of life, soon left me no doubt that owing to the wear and tear of the many past years, the old body would not be able to produce the energy necessary for attending the Congress. Then you, dear President, and your organizing committee came to the rescue by inviting me to address the opening meeting by means of a tape recorder. I thank you from the deepest recesses of my soul for thus making me an active member of the 10th Congress. Though the traveling days are over for my body, the mind roams the world, revisiting places where I have collected, or reflects on the biological problems which have become innumerable since the Linnaean divinely created constant species has gone to the limbo to join Manitou and the other gods of old. I find no time for boredom at all. It was nearly 8 years ago that I began to collect plants systematically. Incidentally, fell in love with a longicorn beetle which one of my brothers had found in a forest in some numbers on the inflorescence of a sambucus. And then I became a devoted coleopterist. Like every field entomologist, I acquired as a schoolboy and an undergraduate a fair amount of knowledge of detail in the life of many beetles concerning their environment, food, and variation. Detail of which I published in the Botanistic and Systematic Papers, which one cannot expect a geneticist or a student of evolution to read. For instance, in a forest south of Hildesheim, one found at the site of a brook where sand had accumulated a bimbidion on the top of the sand under flat stones, a flat species, some of the specimens, the dull black, others, the majority of them, dull metallic green. Accidentally pushing a part of the sand into the brook, I saw floating about another species, bright green, very glossy, with the elytra strongly convex instead of flat. That species lived a few centimeters below the other in a sand saturated with water. As regards variation, the most interesting case I found is that of Cicindela germanica, a common species on cultivated ground and not confined to sand as so many of the species of the genus are. It is a small, dull green insect of which glossy metallic blue specimens and matte, pitchy black ones have been known for a long time to occur in various districts. I have come across such specimens only once in the far surroundings of Hildesheim. In one place in the valley where I was born, and where I collected these blue and black specimens for a number of years as material for exchange with foreign coleopterists. They occurred on a few acres of ground sloping from the valley up to the wood. I never counted the normally colored individuals, but my impression is that about 1 in 10 of the specimens seen was either black or glossy blue. If the Mendelian breeding experiment with beans had at that time already been rediscovered, I would have mentioned the variation of Cicindela germanica to my mentor in zoology at the University of Göttingen, Professor Ernest Ehlers. there is another point in the variation of insects which is much neglected. Though all biologists seem to agree now that individuals are never absolutely alike, very few are aware that in bisymmetrical beings, the left and right sides are likewise different. The study of variation, therefore, begins with a comparison of left with right, and this will inevitably lead to the conclusion that the processes of growth, division, and regulation are only more or less mathematically correct. Variability being a primary attribute of life. As this question will be dealt with in a paper I'm writing on Stenopornia, a genus of fleas, I will confine further remarks here on this subject to an omission which could have been avoided if I had prepared a paper on the mechanism of copulation. In certain Lepidoptera for reading at the meeting of this symposium at the 9th Congress at Amsterdam. Being deaf, I did not join the symposium which discussed the great variety in the tail end segments of the male insects and their frequent asymmetry. When at the turn of this century I worked at the revision of the Swingidae, it was discovered that the phenomenon of asymmetry in the genitalia obtained to a various degree in both sexes among genera of the American subfamily Caecidae, and was most pronounced in some species of Hemorrhagia, Nearctic and Palearctic, and Cephonodes, Oriental and Ethiopian. In the male, the left clasper of this hawk moth is more or less reduced, and the anal segment of much modified. And in a female, the orifice of the vagina, which is normally central, is shifted to the left. As this change of position is not indicated in species of which the male organs are but moderately asymmetrical, the process of this evolution probably started in the mill. And as part of the eighth segment, abdominal segment, is the vagina, while the male organs belong to the ninth and tenth segment. It is reasonable to conclude that the adjustment of the sexes to each other has been achieved by natural selection based on the plus-minus status of all morphological detail. The asymmetry discussed is by no means confined in Lepidoptera to Sphingidae. I found it in all the African and Oriental Syntomidae dissected, and in some Arctidae, and it would be worthwhile to study the tail ends of both sexes of the American Syntomidae, which I have not touched. Before concluding this address, I beg leave to remark that all general statements based on one or a few species are suspect and require confirmation by the study of other species. The number of insects being much larger than that of all other animals together, entomologists will never be short of work. But in hoping that this general statement will remain correct, we must also be reminded that there have been and there still are civilizations hostile to the study of nature, and that even Aristotle had to flee from Athens in order to avoid the fate of Socrates. The members of the 10th Congress of Entomology have my sincerest good wishes for a successful meeting and an enjoyable time in Canada.